Hey everyone, welcome back to Yossi Schmidt Show. Today we have Libby Emmons from the Postmillennial and Human Events on the show. Libby, can you please introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Libby Emmons. I'm the editor-in-chief with the Postmillennial and Human Events. Thanks for having me on.
So, the Postmillennial was founded when?
Postmillennial was founded in 2018 by Matt Azrieli in Montreal. And then in, was it 2022? We got together with Human Events, and we have a new owner, which is the Human Events Media Group with Jeff Webb. So yeah, so that's kind of that's our very brief history.
Well, in your very brief history, you accomplished a lot. The Postmillennial is out there breaking stories every day, important stories. And you're also with Jack Posobiec.
Yep, Jack Posobiec. He's a senior editor with Human Events, and we work together closely. Yeah, and he's great to work with.
And yeah, so let's get right into it. There's a problem with the media, both on the left and on the right, where they make fake news up and they whitewash with cultural news. They skip over stories that they don't that doesn't fit their narrative. Cultural, economic, political, and then we also have the bloodbath hoax.
Sure. Yeah, I would say that the media isn't necessarily making up stories, but usually what's going on is that the perspective is very different depending on who's doing the reporting and what the agenda is of the people and the outlet doing the reporting. So you could have, and this is something that I find really fascinating, specifically regarding the trans issue. You'll have drastically different kinds of reporting on the exact same story. A great example would be a story where just recently you have the Department of Justice suing the state of Utah for preventing a trans prisoner from gaining access to cross-sex hormones, women's underwear, preventing him from fulfilling his request to only be pat down by female guards, right? And eventually this inmate, this male inmate, attempted castration, self-castration. So the Department of Justice is suing because it took like 6 months or whatever for him to be prescribed cross-sex hormones, and then some additional period of time before he gained access to them. Now, the Department of Justice reports on this and calls this man he, she, calls this man she repeatedly throughout. You have major media outlets calling this man who attempted to castrate himself, meaning that he's definitely male, calling him she. This is a guy who went to prison, and then decided that he was actually a woman and sought to be transferred into the women's prison and to serve his time among women. It makes absolutely no sense. So when the Postmillennial reports on this, we might not call him he because we are a Canadian publication and there are hate speech laws in Canada, and those hate speech laws are very strict, and you're not allowed by law to quote unquote misgender someone slash what we would call tell the truth. You're not allowed by law to tell the truth in Canada regarding gender when it comes to men and women who believe themselves to be the opposite sex. So we tend to use the person's last name, but we would never refer to this man as she. Yet when you open up the documents from the Department of Justice, that's what it says. It says she. You'll see ABC or NBC or any of the other leftist mainstream outlets calling him she. They just lie. So is it fake news? Are they making up that story? No, but they are lying in the telling of that story. They are so skewed and biased that they refuse to acknowledge reality. So you find that in a number of, you can find that in a number of cases, I think. But the trans issue is where it's really stark.
And it's intentional. It's not like
Yeah.
that's how they view it. It's intentional.
Yeah. It is intentional. It's intentional because they are trying to push a specific narrative. Also, with regard to the trans stuff, you have them talk about, you know, these outlets, ABC, NBC, you know, CBS, take your pick, New York Times, Washington Post. They will talk about things like gender affirming care for minors, which is in fact a euphemism for poisoning children with cross-sex hormones or engaging in dramatic life-altering body modification surgery for the purpose of attempting to make the child look more like the opposite sex. They call it gender affirming, and thereby they gloss over what's really going on, which is, you know, girls taking testosterone and getting facial hair, which they can never get rid of for the rest of their lives. Taking testosterone and having a deeper voice, which never goes away for the rest of your life. Potential reproductive issues and complications there. The removal of, you know, a healthy girl's breasts that she then can never nurse a child, right? And so they call that affirmation. But when reality, what it is a, it's a mutilation. And it's a poisoning of these girls' bodies. And the same is true for what they do to young men and to boys. They will give them puberty blocking drugs, which stunt growth. And that's, you know, that stunts growth in terms of your height and in terms of the development of secondary sex characteristics. And then they'll put you on cross-sex hormones, which feminize your features. If you're a boy, they change your appearance from looking masculine, from looking feminine. It results in the growth of, you know, what appear to be female breasts on your body. And these things don't go away. That doesn't go away. You have to have surgery to have that, you know, like gynecomastia. You have to have surgery to have that, those growths removed. And they call that affirmation. But if you actually dig into what's going on with this stuff, if you listen to what the doctors say and what the affirming therapists, so-called, what they would say, the goal of giving minors these drugs and surgeries is to make it so that once they are adults, they pass more easily as the opposite sex. That's what they mean by life-saving. They mean that way the kid doesn't kill themselves, and that way they look more like the opposite sex when they are adults. The suicide thing has been essentially debunked. Leo Supira has done great work on that in City Journal and debunked a bunch of that. And also the other thing too is a study has just come out showing that most teens will desist from feeling like they're the opposite sex by the time they're adults. So pushing them into these changes so young is really damaging. And we're seeing lawsuits too. But yeah, so media pushes this narrative and it's a lie and it's damaging. But is it fake or is it really, it's like this insane bias is what I think it is. To a certain extent, I feel like the job of postmillennial and human events, like what we try to do is point out, you know, specifically postmillennial, which is the news side, but what we try to do is like really point out reality and the truth. And encourage people to think critically and not just accept these lying terms.
So what you're saying is it's not fake. They're not making the story up out of thin air. They're not right. Saying, hey, the sky is pink.
Mm-hmm.
And just entirely, they're using their... using their bias, and they're letting their bias write the story for them.
Yes, I think that that's right. And they're letting that bias be the reason that they use certain words over others.
So they're, yeah. I hear. But at the same time, we have people that skip stories and don't publish mm-hmm. stories because it doesn't fit their narrative either.
Right. And that's true on both sides, you know? I think that that's... curating the news is something that's definitely important. And that's something that a lot of editors have to do. You can't just assign every story. You have limited staff. You have limited, you know, bandwidth to run things. We run, I think, something like 25 stories at the Postmillennial every day, maybe like 10 at Human Events. We do more international news and opinion at Human Events. And then some, you know, news, U.S. news and Canadian news at Postmillennial with some news analysis. So there's a balance, but you can't run everything, right? You have to pick what you think your readers are going to be most interested in and what you think are the most important stories to get out there. And that's really a balance too. Like, what do our readers want to hear about? Today we ran a story about a grandma from Colorado who was arrested on charges, like four misdemeanor charges stemming from January 6th. She had prayed about it. She had gone to the Stop the Steal rally. She felt compelled to do that. She was at the Capitol. She was praying with a group of people outside the Capitol. She got caught up in the crowd, went inside. She wandered around for 10 minutes and left. And now she's looking at potential jail time.
It's insane. It's literally, literally insane. But I know what you're saying. Like, when I do my TWS news roundup, I have to look what story is important. And then, like, I do the top 10 every day. And then there's 25 news stories on my website, including the top 10. And every day I go through the top 10, the 11 through 25. And I'm like, what story is marketing is piques interest? That's not one of the top 10. I don't have to include it in the top 10. What will pique the interest of the potential reader that will bring people to my website? So I know exactly what you're saying. And again, I used to do 50 news stories a day on the roundup.
That's a lot.
You can't do that. You can't do that.
That's a lot of stories.
So I sat down with one of my good friends. He's going to kill me if I say his name, so I'm not saying his name. To quote him, he's a behind-the-scenes guy. We do 25 stories a day. And that's what we do. Sometimes I might do 26, but mostly 25 news stories a day. But I get what you're saying. And then also, you have to know, even if, let's say, Trump, there is proof of something Trump did, which there is, but let's say there would be proof of something. A lot of conservative outlets would leave that out and not talk about that. And I would put that in the roundup.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the facts are important. And I think, you know, what the Department of Justice uncovers, whether it's, you know, whether their interpretation of it is realistic or not, is also important. And I think that readers deserve to know that. There's no reason for an American consumer of news to not see something. Do you know what I mean? Like, Americans are smart enough to know what's up, to think critically, to dig into stories themselves that they find interesting, and to not just accept what they're being told. So I agree with you on that. Like, I think that's really key. And that's why even when we were running the, you know, we ran the story this morning about the grandma who was arrested, we covered what it is that she said that she had done. We covered what the DOJ said. We covered what the FBI said. You have to put all of that stuff in and let the reader make the decision, because a lot of things are just far too nuanced for, you know, to just gloss over. Another thing that's sort of been interesting recently, and this is, you know, this has been covered primarily by conservative news, but you have a situation where the Biden administration has come up with a policy to allow 30,000 illegal immigrants from specific countries. I think there's nine countries, maybe Venezuela, Cuba. Why can't I remember the others? And a couple of others. I can look it up. But they've decided to allow 30,000 illegal immigrants from these countries in. And what they came up with was that nationals from these nations can submit online through an app called CBP1. And what you can do is you can say, hey, I'd like to cross the border illegally. So what I'm going to do is schedule an appointment with you to land at a specific port of entry, surrender myself, be processed, arrested, apply for asylum, and then released into the US. And the Biden administration, they set this thing up. This is their big plan. What it means in practice is that, you know, if you're in Venezuela or if you're a Venezuelan national and you're living, you know, somewhere else, you can go online, you can download this app, and you can submit at a port of entry. And then the Biden administration will either authorize you to come do that or not. So this is what the program is. It was recently, I think it was the Center for Immigration Studies did a FOIA request to try and get information about where people are landing, right? Where they're coming from, where the airports they're going to. And they discovered that the Biden administration doesn't want to say what airports they're going to because they feel that there's a security risk in doing that. The Center for Immigration Studies put that out. A lot of conservative outlets picked up that story and said Biden is conducting secret flights of illegal immigrants to the U.S. Well, a couple things wrong with that. They're not secret flights because the whole program is available. You can read all about it on the, you know, on the DHS website. It's right there. It's not secret. Also, Biden is not, the U.S. isn't paying for those flights. I mean, maybe the U.S. is paying NGOs and the NGOs are paying for those flights. I don't know. That's possible. But the U.S. isn't arranging the flights. The people basically who want to come in, they get permission to do that, but they have to arrange their own travel. And what the Biden administration says is that this has greatly reduced the number of illegal immigrants from those countries flowing across the borders. But of course, they're coming in anyway. So what worries me is when you say secret flights, what you're doing is you are glossing over the truth in a way that makes it easier for your opposition or people who disagree with you to discredit what you're saying. And that's why it's so important to be accurate with language and accurate with what you're saying. Because saying outright, the Biden administration is authorizing would-be illegal immigrants to surrender at ports of entry and apply for asylum, that's bad enough. You don't have to throw on the extra secret flights thing. You know, like it's bad enough. What they're doing out in the open is bad enough.
It's clickbait and it's lying and it's misleading.
It's misleading and you don't have to do it. Yeah. Because the truth is bad enough. You know? You don't 100%. Have to cover it up. You don't have to make it seem worse than it is because it's already really bad.
Yes. Unfortunately, news happens every day and unfortunately people mislead every day.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings to the next point where we have fact checkers.
Mm-hmm.
And people, I always say, who gets to decide what's misinformation? And
what did you say? Who
gets to decide what is misinformation?
Right. That's a super good question. Yeah.
And the end result, in my opinion, is the people, the readers.
Yeah. Well,
you have to realize that everything you read online is not necessarily the truth, and you have to do your own research. And I say in the roundup, if I get something wrong, call me out on it.
Mm-hmm.
Use your own brains. I'm giving you what I think are the most important stories, 25 news stories a day, and you got to call me out on it. And if they miss something out in the roundup, let me know.
Yeah.
I'm human.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. The use of the term misinformation has been so misused. You recently had, you know, this thing with Trans Day of Visibility, right? So Trans Day of Visibility was an act like created by a trans person, in 2009, it was recognized. Biden has issued a little proclamation on Trans Day of Visibility almost every year that I can recall since he's been in office. In 2022, I believe it was, he put out a video for Trans Day of Visibility telling parents to affirm their kids. He was very insistent on this. It was really a disgusting video, and it was sort of horrifying to watch parents affirm your kids. You wonder, does he even know what he's talking about? Like, does he know what he's saying? I don't think he does. He's been very much a trans activist in the White House. He draped the White House in the progress flag, which is, you know, the pride flag is one thing. The progress flag has ideology on it that I cannot even remotely get behind. So that's a problem. But anyway, so he announced this, he proclaimed the day again this year, and it was on Easter. Easter, of course, is the most holy of the Christian holidays. For Catholics, it's an extremely holy day. Biden says that he's Catholic, and here he is doing this. They did have the Easter egg roll, what have you, you know, but they did not, there's no mention of like the holiness of the holiday. It's just this kid's free for all, which, you know, that's fun and it has its place for sure, but that's not the purpose of the holiday. So Biden proclaimed Easter Sunday to be Trans Day of Visibility. A bunch of conservatives were like, you know, clutching pearls, myself included. How dare you? This is our holiest day of the year. There's been a lot taken away from the Christian culture and that, you know, it's an oppressor. It's the religion of the colonizers, whatever else. Right. So fine. But then you had the White House and you had all these people on the left saying, no, it has literally always been on March 31st. So this is just fake news and it has nothing to do with Easter and blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, that in itself was like a way to discredit Christianity and to overshadow Easter. And so it was like a little bait and switch. And then you had Karine Jean-Pierre out there going, anybody who has a problem with Easter being Trans Day of Visibility is just transphobic and it's just misinformation. How is it misinformation to say that Biden proclaimed Easter Sunday Trans Day of Visibility when he actually did do that? That's not misinformation. This is the same government that tried to put together the disinformation board, right? The like misinformation, disinformation board with what's her name, who was like the musical theater star, essentially. And the purpose of this board, yeah, right, Nita Jankowicz, that's her. Yeah, Jack was like all over that. That was one of my favorite news cycles in the past couple of years. It was very funny. It. Yeah, she's out there singing Harry Potter song. No, what was it? Was it Harry Potter? I don't know.
Wizard of Oz.
That's right. That's right. It was ridiculous.
Because she actually blocked me. She was like blocking every quote around.
That was so fun. That was a big victory. That was really fun. Anyway, that poor woman. So they said that the goal of this misinformation, disinformation governance board, if you looked at their materials, their goal was to go into countries in the Northern Triangle in Central America and explain to people why they shouldn't immigrate to the US. That's what they said. But they were really all over the place. And so they said this one thing. And again, it was this bait and switch. And the goal was to like go after Americans and, you know, tell everyone to what to think and how to think about things. And that is like just a hallmark of this administration, is that they think that they are the arbiters of truth and reality, when really what they're doing is lying and obfuscating reality every chance they get.
All right. Do you have any closing? I don't know where to go from here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to keep talking. Like, I will always just keep talking. It's a problem.
You have any closing remarks for? Do you have any closing remarks for the show?
No, thanks for having me on. It's been a fun conversation. I hope your readers, your viewers are looking out for the fake news, and I bet they can spot it. Think critically about it.
If we just use our brains.
Yeah, that's the key thing.
Okay, everyone. Remember, hold everyone accountable. Remember, use your brains. And I'll see you on the next Jesse Schmidt Show when we have another great guest.